Blog Talk Radio.
Not complain at all. How are you?
No complaints. None whatsoever. None whatsoever. It is a good day. It is Sunday, February 19th, 2012. And we just thank everyone who's joining us today in the chat room, all of our listeners, those who enjoy the archive shows. We thank you for being here. My name is Kimberly Ville, and I represent Black Free Thinkers as well as Black Non-Believers of Chicago. And we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you.
And I am Mandisa Thomas, and I am the president of Black Nonbelievers Incorporated, which is based out of Atlanta, and we are walking by sight, not faith.
Exactly, exactly. And we just thank everyone for tuning in today. Today we wanted to do an update show, or just basically kind of like a follow-up to kind of get some progress reports and find out what's happening in the lives, but also to introduce you to those who participated in the African Americans for Humanism billboard campaign. We just thought that it was important for you to kind of take a time out, and get a chance to speak with, you know, the people that participated. You can call in with your questions. Our telephone number here is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. And if you would like to speak with us or our guests, please press 1 to let us know that you're in a queue and you're ready to, you know, ask a question or make a comment. But there are some events coming up really soon. Mandy?
Yes, I would like to proudly announcing that Atlanta, as well as you, Kim, in Chicago, Orlando, Houston, L.A., D.C., I believe, we're all participating in the Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers, which will be next Sunday, the 26th. And we have various events. You can visit the Day of Solidarity fan page on Facebook. You can also email them at aadayofsolidarity@yahoo.com to find out what events may possibly be in your city. We will have a special edition general meeting, which will be taking place next weekend, and it will feature our normal. If you've ever had a chance to experience one of our general meetings, I'm happy that Kim, before I became a co-host of the show, featured us and our general meeting, and we had a great time. So we will incorporate all those elements in addition to some special guests that we will have featured. So if you're in the Atlanta area, please come out. There is no charge, admission charge. We'll have some products and such, and I think some other people will have some products that you might be interested in purchasing. But we have the Reason Rally coming up March 24th, and also check the Black Nonbelievers calendar on our website and our meetup page for a special event taking place after that that you can purchase tickets for. We also have an upcoming, I think the Center for Inquiry has a Council for Secularism event in Florida. It is taking place in March, and also the African Americans for Humanism Conference will be coming up soon. As soon as we get the details on that, we will update you.
Excellent. And also, Women in Secularism, that's coming up as well.
Yes.
I guess COVID is for that.
Absolutely.
Yes, can't forget about that. Oh, yes. And, you know, a lot of events, a lot of things are taking place, and we just want to make sure that you all are informed. Black Nonbelievers of Chicago is also holding an event for the Day of Solidarity. The information can be found on blacknonbelieversofchicago.org. I will post that up a little bit later on my Facebook page and in the room a little bit later on today. Black Nonbelievers of Orlando, they're also holding an event, and I'll post that on Facebook later on as well. And if my memory serves me correctly, I believe Black Freethinkers of Kansas City is also holding an event. So there are several events that are taking place. I posted the Facebook group for the Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers on the Blog Talk Radio chat room here, but I also shared it on my wall. So please go out and take a look at that to see what's happening in an area near you, because I know Dallas is holding an event. As a matter of fact, Alex Jules spoke about it a little bit last week, and I know he'll be speaking about it again today regarding the events that they're going to, you know, going to hold. So thank you so much. And Mandy, did you give them your email address?
Yes, you can reach me at mandisa@blacknonbelievers.org. We also have two general email addresses, which is info@blacknonbelievers.org, as well as blacknonbelievers@yahoo.com. And our website is www.blacknonbelievers.org.
Very good. I posted that earlier in the room, so that information is in the chat as well. So without further ado, we would like to speak with, you know, a couple of our guests today. We have Jamila on the line.
Yay!
Hello, Jamila. Hold on. Maybe you have Jamila on hold. Okay, there you go. Can you hear us now, Jamila?
Let there be talk.
Hey, lady, how are you? It's been a while.
I am wonderful. Happy New Year. Happy New Day. How's it going?
Everything is fabulous. We have no complaints.
I was just saying, I'm excited about all of the events coming up you let us know about. Thank you for that calendar.
Oh, not a problem. Yes, there's a lot more going on, a lot more that we will all be participating in. I'm sure we'll be seeing each other quite a few times this year.
Hooray for that.
Yes.
So, Jamila, do you mind sharing with us a little bit about yourself? You know, a few of us, we kind of know a little bit about your background, but we have some new people, and we want to let them know how wonderful you are. So please share some information with us.
Well, I'm Jamila Bay, and I'm a journalist out of Washington, D.C. I've been writing about issues of separation of church and state and atheism and whatnot for more than a few years now. And I am currently working on a book that is as yet untitled, but it talks about the role of religiosity and religion in the lives of African American women in particular. And I'm way over scheduled. I do a whole lot, but I like to do a whole lot, so things are grand.
Awesome.
Excellent. That is fantastic. And I saw you posted a link to an article today. Where are the black atheists?
I know Andrew Sullivan from, the Dish. Andrew Sullivan didn't even really write much of anything. He just sort of quoted me saying that a quote from the African Americans for Humanism campaign explaining that I lament that any other group who exists is able to mostly separate their ethnicity or their what's identified as their race from their religious tradition. They're not impugned. Whereas African Americans who say, I am not religious, I personally get told regularly, oh, well, you wish you were white, or do you think that you are better than other black people?
Right.
I know I'm preaching to the choir right here, but I get that quite a bit. oh, you're
wow.
You're just mad at God. You went to that college, and now you think you're so smart. And I'm like, no, actually, I've been to the place since I was four.
Right.
I needed to get big enough that I could say what I wanted to say. So I am an adult, and I speak for myself, and I'm happy to do so.
Right.
Exactly. What they don't realize is that it's not that, you know, when they, especially when they come with that line, oh, you went to college and now you think you're smart. In all actuality, when you go to college, you realize how ignorant you really are.
Indeed. There is so much we don't know. And I have no problem admitting that I don't know that. My problem comes in when one tries to force the intellectually lazy position. Well, God did it. Stop asking questions. See, that I have a problem with. Ugh.
Right. Exactly. Mandy's dealt with some of the same issues.
I'm sorry?
Right. I said you've dealt with some of the same issues with people coming with these sideways, you know, digs, if you will, saying that, you know, basically we're identifying with other cultures and we're being a traitor to our own.
Right. Yes. What I've also experienced is black people defend other blacks, defending religion, especially Christianity, because it's, you know, they say it's a concept that came out of Africa and that its origins are African in nature. And my thing is, well, regardless as to whether that's true or not, it's all based on ideas that couldn't be substantiated. So it doesn't justify believing in it, you know, and it doesn't justify how, you know, the current principles were imposed.
Yes.
upon the Africans when they arrived here. And to ignore that is detrimental to a critical thinking process.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
If I may give a plug this evening, I'll be speaking at NC Central. In Durham. Oh, I get all confused because the airport is Raleigh-Durham, and I always forget which city I'm in, but I'm pretty sure it's Durham.
Yes, I think, yeah, NCCU is in, yes, it is in Durham.
Oh, yes, okay, so North Carolina Central University in Durham,
uh-huh.
North Carolina. This evening at 7, I'm talking about why the black community needs more critical thinking.
Okay,
so,
great.
I fully expect that I will get some pushback, but whatever, I bring it.
Hey.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, what's happening now, especially with the African-American humanism campaign and the fact that many of us are now being more vocal and more visible and we're starting to organize to become more acclimated in the community, that we are challenging the status quo. We are challenging what they have become accustomed to believing and thinking, and we're showing them that there is a different way, that there are options, that there are alternatives, and with some people, they're not used to that. So, I mean, I just think this is a wonderful, wonderful time, you know, and I believe that with time and dedication and education, we should start seeing some shifts, you know, even if it's one or two people, that's one or two people more that have been liberated and have found themselves. And we have Tracy and Mario on the line with us right now as well. But, yeah, no, Jamila, that is great. I almost got a chance to see you when you were supposed to debate Carlton Pearson, but I think you got snowed in somewhere.
Yeah, there was a snowstorm somewhere, and then the plane that was connecting through D.C. was late, didn't go out. I would have missed every connection, and it just broke my little heart. Carlton Pearson, who comes out, I think he was one of the Oral Roberts singers at one point with Kathy Lee Gifford. So he was going to learn me something about this loving Jesus that I don't believe in. And it even now breaks my heart that I didn't get to do the debate because I'm really good at debating, and I rather enjoy it. and yeah, telling me, singing to me is not going to do it. So maybe we will meet again.
Excellent, excellent. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Carlton Pearson, he's he used to be a megachurch pastor in Oklahoma. He went to Oral Roberts University. As a matter of fact, he was considered one of Oral Roberts' spiritual sons. So, you know, they had a very close relationship. And what happened was, you know, Carlton had this epiphany, if you will, and he decided that there was no such thing as hell, and hell did not exist. Well, to make a long story short, he lost everything, his church, his standing in the church community, and with some difficulties, he ended up here in Chicago. He's here. He was at Johnny Coleman's church for a while, but it was controversial, so he's no longer there. He holds independent services, and he's trying to rebuild his ministry, but he touts the gospel of inclusion. And the reason why, you know, some people say, well, Kim, why don't you come down hard on Carlton Pearson? Because I've seen his progression, and I believe he's going to progress right out of the church. So he's helping us help people make the transition. So why should we destroy him when he's actually helping us to a certain degree?
You know, indeed, if there is no hell, what's the corollary?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
He's on his journey. We will, operators are standing by. We'll wait. He's going to call any minute, any minute.
Exactly. So that's why, you know, I find people like that, especially the ones that are slowly making transitions out, they can be helpful. We just have to learn how to play their strengths and how to use it to our advantage, because if he's not believing in hell and he's believing in the gospel of inclusion, if you will, then he's somewhat espousing some of the tenets of secularism, and I don't believe he even realizes that he's doing it.
He'll call any minute, any minute.
So you gotta love it. So yeah. So like I said, this has been wonderful. What has been the response, Jamila, in your area to the Billboard campaign?
You know, I have to admit it's been overwhelmingly sort of like, oh yeah, atheists and black people. Oh, okay. Which is a wonderful thing. There hasn't been the pitchfork and torches response that I know my colleague Alex Jules has gotten out of Texas.
Right.
In the D.C. area, Mark Hatcher is on a billboard that's on buses that drives around the city, him and Zora Neale Hurston. I understand I'm in stationary positions with Frederick Douglass. It's encouraging because there is I've heard no outcry. I've heard sort of like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Doubts about religion, you're not alone. Oh, okay, that's fine. Which is a wonderful response when you think about it, because we were really braced for quite the opposite.
Right. And it's been eerily quiet.
Yes, yeah, it has. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Mandy, you haven't received a lot of pushback either. I mean, I've gotten a couple of crazy emails and voicemails, but I did not get the pushback that I had anticipated.
Right. Yeah, I didn't either, and I think it's because people know it's true. People have, you know, we're not, again, at the end of the day, we're not saying that you should, you know, turn or, you know, become an atheist because we are or because we're non-believers. However, you have to admit at some point in your life, even if you still choose to remain religious, that you have had questions about religion and the religion that you subscribe to. Everyone has. You can't deny that at some point in time. And let's just be real about that. You know, and to not be, especially Christianity in particular, and its contradictive nature, you've had questions. You've had things where you was like, this doesn't make any sense. And it's okay to admit it.
Right. It's okay to admit that you have questions, and but unfortunately, you know, from my experience, I'm speaking from my experience and the experience of a few people that I've spoken with, when you have questions and you have doubts, you are pretty much told to suppress those questions and those doubts and to move on and to take to the book. And everybody has a different interpretation of the Bible. And, you know, fortunately, it was the actual reading and studying of the Bible that just forced me out, in addition to my experience with church folks, if you will. So it's been an interesting journey. You know, Jamila, were you raised in a secular household or a religious household?
Oh, come on, I'm a black woman. I was raised in a religious household. My mother was a Southern Baptist. She converted to Catholicism when I was about five. My father was brought up as a follower of Elijah Muhammad, a black Muslim, but he had long stopped practicing by the time I was born. But he still had the we don't eat pork thing in place. I didn't know about bacon until I was 30. Wow, bacon is wonderful. I am not joining any group that is going to keep me away from bacon.
Right.
Especially Applewood smoked bacon.
Oh,
which
girl.
And if you do it right with maybe a Havarti cheese or something and you get that creamy, smoky texture, like bacon is awesome.
Girl.
Awesome. It is, I would argue, it is unholy to keep people away from bacon.
Not the turkey bacon either. Turkey bacon.
Yeah. Oh, no. Turkey bacon is an abomination before all that is... all that is good and true and crunchy and salty, delicious.
I know what I'm getting for her birthday. I'm getting her a jar of baconade just for me.
if some people want to speak in tongues, I want to speak in bacon. But yes. Religious household, I had one. I went to Catholic school from first grade through fifth grade. I went to a public school for sixth through eighth, but then high school was all-girl Catholic school. And then I went to 5.5 years of university at Duquesne University, which is very conservative Catholic, very hard line. And I had a number of theology professors who would start sentences with, well, those heathens at Georgetown would have you believe, but it is such that. I really tried to buy the sacramental wine. I really tried to drink the Kool-Aid of Catholicism. I never bought it. It never made sense to me. I thought that it was a matter of me not believing and not having adequate faith and that all would be revealed. And all that was revealed is that people seemed to be making stuff up as they went along. My questions weren't answered. Scandals kept happening. The question of evil, the question of evil in the church, none of it was ever adequately addressed for me. And I refuse to abdicate my intellectual capacity to just say, oh, well, God works in mysterious ways, end of question. No, didn't work for me. And the more I learned and the more I read, the more I realized religion is a wonderful way of keeping people subjugated. It's a wonderful way of keeping women, in some cases, nearly enslaved. Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
I was having none of it.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, we agree with you wholeheartedly. The guest call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, 310-982-4273. We have 352 on the line. Are you there, caller?
Hi, Kim, it's Tracy.
Hey.
Orlando. Hi, how you doing? I had a quick question for Jamila. I've actually been a fan of yours for about 3 or 4 years. Now, are you going to be on the... are you one of the speakers that are going to be at that conference that's coming up here in Orlando, the CFI one?
Oh, dear. I was supposed to be. However, due to unforeseen scheduling circumstances, I was asked to not speak. I please still support CFI. Please still support the event. I will not be speaking at it, and I will be at the Reason Rally. I will be at the American Atheist Convention in Bethesda, Maryland, right after the Reason Rally. The Center for Inquiry is also hosting a Women in Secularism conference at the end of May, and I will be there moderating a panel and making sure that the questions go smoothly. I will also be at, in the first weekend in May, Center for Inquiry will be hosting an African Americans for Humanism convention in the merry old town of Chicago. And I will be coming there because the food in Chicago is awesome, and I plan to get some deep dish pizza with bacon on it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to make the conference in New Orleans and in Chicago. The Reason Rally might be tough for me, you know, budget-wise, but, yeah, I mean, I'm glad to hear that you're going to be definitely, you know, making the rounds and everything. So
I certainly have to. You know, and I'm so excited about it this year because this is an election year for the highest office in our land. And I am a woman, and there's a lot of political rhetoric going on that makes it very clear that a lot of people don't believe that I should have any say in my health, that I should have any political say in much of my day-to-day life. And so I definitely want to make sure that as the year progresses, as we get closer to the presidential election, then there are congressional elections, let us not forget. But I definitely want to make sure that we bring up some of the more egregious speech that is based on religious ideals that would seek to have women and people who are not multimillionaires subject to the whim of those who purport to speak for them. There's a whole lot of stuff that we really need to make sure that we skeptics bring up and we skeptics call out. So I'm going to be out there, and it all makes for good stories. And as a journalist, I got to, you know, ask the questions of the people who are saying the things. So that's what I'm going to do.
So you're saying that you don't want to live in a theocracy?
If I wanted to live in a theocracy, I'd go somewhere where I'd have to cover my head and toe and body in 100-degree desert heat. I live in the U.S., and I'm very happy to live in the U.S., and I'm
right.
going to make sure that this nation dedicated to the principles of separation of church and state lets people who want to live looking like beekeepers do so. But I choose not to look like a beekeeper. And I like wearing tank tops when it's 100 degrees. And that's what I'm going to do. And I like being able to go to my doctor and get whatever drug my doctor says will help my health.
Exactly. You know, I definitely
right.
concur with you. And we have another caller on the line here, area code 312. We have a Chicago call.
Hi, this is Judy.
Hey, Judy.
Oh, I love the way the show's going so far. And I kind of wanted to bring up a topic on the militant Nation of Islam, because in the black communities, they are the political voice, kind of seen of as an alternative, you know. Well, the white Christians, they have their church, their political powers, and we as a black community, if we all became black Muslims, the nation would be a lot better. We'd build up our own communities. We'd have our own power. But when you really dig down in it, it's full of as much corruption, if not more so, than in the Christian churches. It's not exactly on a moral high ground there.
Exactly. I mean, there's corruption, you know, in any type of organization, or there's the potential for corruption. Let me correct myself there. In any organization, and when it comes to religion, I just, my experience has been, how can I, this God complex. Many of them start to assume a God complex and a Savior complex, if you will. And they really start believing that they are entitled to being revered and being served and being waited upon. And with the Nation of Islam, especially here in Chicago, you have Mosque Miriam here, and which is the headquarters. And you see a lot of young African Americans drifting towards that particular culture. And I won't say that we don't know a lot about it, but I have not seen many in the free thought community actually addressing that particular culture. And so that's very interesting, because I had not actually really thought about it on a wide scale basis as to why we do not necessarily address that particular group.
Well, that particular group, they have a heavy ministry in prisons and in communities that are basically taken over by gangs. Where I grew up in the West Pullman area, there was an active group of them that would hand out the pamphlets on the street when you just drive by, or they train their kids to talk to you when you're in school.
Yes, what you're talking about is when they're selling the final call. They will be on the corner or ramps when you come off the highway, and they'll sell the final call newspaper or the bean pies, or ask you for a donation because they were taking donations. I guess they were trying to buy some farmland or what have you. But, yes, you know, they are ever present in our community, and, you know, maybe we need to do some more research and to address them. But we know that all religions are false, or at least that's my belief, that all religions are false.
Well, they based loosely on the Islamic principles, but even the traditional mainstream Islamists don't recognize them as true Islam. But they don't eat the pork. They don't really expect the women to forcibly put the beekeeper suit on or anything like that, although some voluntarily do so. They strive to lead a clean lifestyle. A lot of them are encouraging vegetarianism, and they want nothing to do with the rest of the community per se. So in that realm, they're a cult.
Well, if I may, this is Jamila hopping in here. I was actually asked this question once. Shouldn't the free thought community do more to speak out against the Reverend Louis Farrakhan with his anti-Semitic remarks and whatnot? And
I think so.
I am not one to tell anyone who in particular they need to speak out against. That's not who I am. That's not what I do. You follow your own heart and desires. I will say this, particularly African Americans who don't know that there is a long history and tradition of non-religion and lack of adherence to the Abrahamic religious traditions in our history. When they decide that they are not willing to adhere to a particular Christianity and they want to go somewhere else, many are unaware that they have the option of checking none of the above. When they want to leave Christianity, a lot of them have heard of Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Black Muslim movement, and they're attracted to the message that says, Black people, you are hated and you are subjugated because you are a superior people. And when you stop having babies out of wedlock, when you stop using drugs and alcohol, when you take care of your homes and you take care of your communities and you become righteous people, then the blessings will flow. Then the esteem will come, especially because you cannot be denied because you are living the principles of this righteousness, and all will see, and you will rise to that position of authority. There is, and then there's some legend of 1,000 years of rule by white people or something, and then black people, like, come back and take over. You know, I get my myths mixed up, and I don't want to get it completely wrong, but there's something along those lines. That can be an attractive message to someone who believes that he has no power. That's an attractive message that you can share with someone who is told and who takes it to heart. If I control the things that I am able, if I become a better person by every standard and every ability, and if I do this thing and give myself to the real God, then I will be rewarded. We know that that's not likely to happen, because this real God who's going to rain down blessings does not exist. He's never shown himself to exist. But in the meantime, what happens? Well, you get a young man, usually, who stops drinking, stops having sex activity outside of a committed relationship, which a lot of people think is a good thing. He may choose to conduct himself in a manner befitting a decent young man. And, you know, there are a lot of people who would say, well, then do it. That's good. I argue, though, that it's, again, you know, just prolonging the march to there is nothing. If you cast off religion, you need to cast off religion and not simply trade a red card for a black one or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that part of the attraction to the Nation of Islam is that black people who are fed up with Christianity or don't feel that it is a thought process, a philosophy they wish to adhere to, don't realize that they can say, I adhere to none. They feel like they need to stop eating pork and wear bow ties and become Nation of Islam supporters.
Well, it's very easy to trade one for the other. When I was a Jehovah's Witness and I left, I traded that and became a Mormon before I completely gave up religion.
How did that help me understand? You left. Okay, you left. What attracted you as a black woman to be told that you're and I don't mean to speak badly. I need to understand, because I don't. As a Mormon woman, you're supposed to become a broodmare for the Lord and have as many children as you can, or else you're going to go to hell.
And they hate black people, too. The fact that black people are cursed in the Mormon religion.
Yeah.
You're black because you're cursed by God.
because God needs an army because he's God and he needs other. I'm not even getting into that. We're going to stay away from the Matt and Trey Book of Mormon. Great soundtrack. Everyone should listen to it. Hasadiga Eva, why y'all? But, like, how does a black woman who is in America, who understands the tradition of us being forcibly bred, how do you get in league with Mormonism, which says you're supposed to be somebody who's good to breed as many children as possible? I that's a major disconnect for me, and I don't understand that. Can you help me?
Sure. When I was Jehovah's Witness, their whole message was, do not breed. The world is coming to the end soon. You must prepare, because you're going to die soon or you're going to be out of paradise. And when I was going through a nervous breakdown, I had a friend who was a Mormon who talked me into it and said, well, the world isn't going to end. In fact, the world's going to continue on, and you can become co-partner with a man who will be God of your own universe. And for some reason, that just was an attractive idea for me at the time when I was half out of my mind.
Yeah, they seem to want to get you when you're down, when you're sick, when you're, you know, when you're alone, when you're at a desperate point in your life.
Right.
Well, that's how they got my mom into the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah,
she was here from Jamaica.
We can offer you something better. You know, we have the better alternative.
Exactly, but that's all religions. They capitalize and they manipulate any type of hurt or pain that you may be feeling. And if you come over here, we can help you if you accept our God. And, you know, I used to always say, and people would get angry at me, but I used to say that they peddled Jesus and peddled, you know, God in a church like it was a $5 crack piece, you know. And come over here and get some of Jesus. Here, smoke some of this right here, and you'll feel good. You'll be like the rest of us. See, the rest of us over here. And they peddle it like it's a drug. And it's the whole thing is interesting, but, you know, that's the importance of the African American for Humanism campaign, because we are showing people and telling them that they do not necessarily have to hold on to their doctrines or their dogmas, if you will, in order to lead a productive life. And in many cases, if you sit down and you show them, not all of them, but there are some that have had their lives altered in a more negative fashion because of being held back by religion. And so it's just, it's interesting. But, you know, again, we're offering an alternative. An alternative is you don't have to believe that. You know, it's just as important to get that campaign and to keep it going. Many people are trying to basically relegate the campaign to a Black History Month event. And, no, this goes well beyond Black History Month. And I just feel that we need to convey that message and to, you know, again, we need the support of, you know, minorities and non-minorities in the free thought community so that we can continue on with our message and we can get out there and let people know that you can lead a healthy, happy, productive life without the guidance of some deity, whatever you call him.
Or
if anybody wants to give me anything for my birthday, I want some of those magic panties. Well, go ahead.
Mm-mm.
You have to go to the temple before they give you the magic underwear.
So, you know, I just think
I'd rather enjoy Big Love, though. It was a lovely
quite
series.
Quite interesting. Clothes look terrible, though. Ugh. Just,
But, yeah, so, you know, that's the good thing. So, Judy, what was the actual event that led you out of all religions? You just said, get it, it's all nuts.
Well, I had a friend who was a Baptist who told me, just read the Bible, and you don't need God or anyone else to tell you what the Bible says. Just read it and let it guide you. So I did what I never did before up to the 21st years of my life. I read the Bible. Instant atheist.
Yeah, it's funny how it works that way.
Exactly. And I think we have Frank on the phone. Is that you, Frank? Hello, 843?
Oh, this is Matt, 843. Oh, I didn't know it was from... Yeah, no, I was actually calling.
Hey, Matt.
My neighbor. Yeah, my neighbor is a Black Muslim. And this, I've had many conversations with him. You know, the doctrine is that it was 6,000 years, the devil was supposed to rule till Elijah Muhammad came. And when I first heard about it, it sounded interesting to me because he found out I was an atheist. He was like, well, atheists are really intelligent people and all this. We don't believe in the mystery God and all that. But and when I really got into it, it was just like the other religions, but they made something different up about it. And, you know, they say the origin of the white race is that Yaqub took, I forget who exactly it was, but Yaqub took the original people and started doing something with the breeding. He was a mad scientist, according to them, and created them to rule for 6,000 years. But I was watching what they said, and a lot of the reason they said a lot more people are coming to it is because we got a lot of preachers, they say, dealing with just mystery, and these people don't want mystery. These young people want something sound, but yeah, it's real, real. When you get down to it, it's real anti-Semitic, and I mean, reality is no different from the bigotry of the other religions. And but just like living beside him, yeah, they say that Jesus was against Christianity, and it says so in the Bible, and the Bible talks about the American slavery and how the seed of Abraham is the black race because they were in bondage for 400 years. But yeah, that's living beside him. There's been many, many, many conversations he had. The point where he lost me was he said atheists are just people that don't follow the scripture. That's what they mean by atheists. But
very good. So that's interesting. But you have some personal experience with a Muslim. So again, you know, basically, I guess my question to you is, he's, you know, evangelizing or proselytizing to you. Do you show him where his religion falls short, if you will?
Well, many times when we talk, it's just more of a listen level. Like I have learned things from the Bible with him, like the fact that it said with Noah's Ark that it was seven clean animals, seven clean animals, two unclean animals. But I have brought out things that. Like that before, like his real thing where he always loses me at is that he says how this nation is on its way to be destroyed because of the whole with the homosexuality thing, and saying, you know, he even admitted that, yeah, you have some people that are born gay, but other than that it's still bad, which I really don't understand how you can say you're born gay but it's still bad. But the truth of the matter is he is probably the only close, like-minded person living in the vicinity of me. If I walk out my house, I have five churches all on the same street beside each other. Probably about got more churches than anything else in the city. I'm from Lake City, South Carolina, and it's like Lake City's below the poverty line, but there is a ton of churches. And like you said,
not paying taxes into that city coffer. That could, you know, be going to the schools, could be going to maintenance, could be going to hiring more city workers to take somebody off of an unemployment line.
Right. Exactly. To improve the roads, to provide capital in economically and educationally disadvantaged areas, to provide jobs, resources, you know. That's why I feel that the churches should be taxed. And Matt, what is your personal view on the African American for Humanism campaign? Are you aware of that campaign?
Yeah, I'm aware of it. The city I live in is about 89% African American. You know, I speak as a white male. I've told some of my friends before. I've said, well, you know, when I learned, like, you know, Christianity was imposed on the slaves, like what they said earlier, the only thing to my knowledge that Christianity takes from any African tradition is from Horus and the Virgin of Assisi, or something like that, from Egypt. But still, the Bible says the descendants of Egypt are cursed or something like that. But I've said before that, you know, the only reason that, you know, your family is very spiritual is because at some point down the line, that religion was forced upon your ancestors. And, you know, I've been called racist for saying that before, but I think it's good to finally see that. But you will have, like you say, you got a lot of preachers now that you had this African American humanism will bring out, will call you some type of sellout or something like that. And it's just there's a lot of ignorance towards atheism in general. And I know where I'm from, I went to talk to a preacher about a job one time. You know, he seemed the whole time he was more intent on trying to convert me than talk. And then I tried to explain to him that it really doesn't matter what you say to me. You can't, you know, not make me believe something. I change his belief to believe. But he said, well, you rather believe this or rather believe that. And it was just, I think it's something that's really needed. And now we're seeing a rise in that than we were, say, 10 years or before that. We're seeing more of a rise in people just saying the dumb religion. Because I used to say this, though. What I've noticed more with the people I know I would say they're more spiritual, even though I say spiritual is the same thing as religious. They're not as traditionally religious as their parents were. They believe in God and all this, but they're starting to question things more, and you'll see that now.
Okay, so I have a question for Jamila and Mandy here. Where would you like to see the minority community, the minority humanist community, a year from now?
Well, where I would like to see them is taking taxes from every church in the minority community. Here's the thing. I am more interested in bringing knowledge to those without it, to bringing medicine to those without it, to bringing books written by Hitchens and Orwell to those who haven't seen those. We need to be able to help people come to a place where they are choosing of their own volition. I would argue many people don't even know there is such a thing as a black atheist. I think many people of all races don't realize that atheism is indeed a position that just says, I am without the belief in any supernatural higher power, and when you tell me God did it, I should stop thinking. That's something that I should push back against. I don't care if you choose to go into a church and say magic words and eat wafers and drink wine. That's none of my concern. I need you to get out of my uterus and in Virginia and in Texas to actually get out of my vagina when I choose to have health care. I need you to, if you think that birth control is bad and is evil and is wrong, I need you to let your daughter know that, to let your wife know that, and you keep that away from me, and how dare you attempt to legislate it. So I want African-American humanists to talk about how the religious superstitions and mythologies that are trying to be legislated into law are harmful to us all. So that's what I would like. That's what I would like.
Right. I would have to agree with Jamila as well. And I would just love for the word atheist, atheism, non-believer, or what have you, to not be such an anomaly in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
When people know, like Jamila, when people know what is entailed of being an atheist, it's not so scary. You know, people need to stop being afraid. And they need to stop
listening.
Well,
in schools, if they would acknowledge atheist and agnostic exist, when they're doing studies on world religion, they always deliberately leave out atheist or just a brief mention, well, atheists are people who don't believe in God, and that's the end of story, not present it as a valid concept as they present all these world religions as valid concepts. So kids don't really know there's a choice.
Right.
Exactly.
It's the default
position.
You have to give somebody a mythology. We're all atheists in regard to Zeus. If you worship Zeus, whatever. But we're all atheists in regards to Thor. We're all atheists in regards to gods we don't even know that existed, that people worshiped and built temples to, that have been washed away by tsunamis we don't even know happened. So there have always been gods and goddesses and whatnot that people no longer believe in. I just can't wait until this so-called God of Abrahamic traditions goes that way as well.
Yes, I agree. And I remember growing up and being interested in like Greek mythology and different mythologies. And when I used to go into churches to perform and sing and such, I'm like, why are these people worshiping this guy? You know, I mean, it was always such a foreign concept to me. And I'm like, why are people believing in this God and they don't believe in the other ones? You know, or
exactly.
Even in Islam. And so I'm like, why are they taking this shit so seriously?
Well, they were taught.
Yeah.
They were taught.
Well, if you were raised from a point of view of no religion and you were introduced into the Judeo-Christian Muslim concept of God being this all-powerful, sexist, racist being, who would want to say, okay, I'll worship that thing?
Exactly. Well, and, you know, it has evolved over time, and that's the reason why I think it's important that we become more visible, that we put a name and a face to non-belief or free thought, and we get out there, and because in many cases, they aren't quite sure what the word atheist or humanist means. I've had many people say to me that they thought atheists were devil worshipers, or they thought atheists hated Christians and hated religion. Now, there are some, you know, you have different factions, you have different degrees, you have different, you know, people that think differently, of course, but one of the successes that I've had personally is just talking to people and explaining my particular stance on whatever issues. So that's why I think it's important that we do get out in the community and we start to allow them to get to know us and to be examples. That's the reason why I'm promoting, you know, solutions-based free thought, in which we actually go out into the community and start doing some work and allowing people to get to know us.
I like those billboards for that particular purpose, too. So simple that anyone passing by can kind of see, hey, there's another thing there. I just wish we could have something like that here in Nashville, home of the Bible Belt, with the Southern Baptist Convention nearby. Put a billboard across the street from them.
Right. It's just, it's been interesting, you know, this entire campaign and, you know, the direction that the free thought community is going in. And I'm pretty sure, you know, Mandy and Jamila both can attest that a few years ago, you know, 3-4 years ago, trying to find a black non-believer or a black atheist that was truly out, with the exception of a few people, but trying to find someone that was truly out, it was almost impossible.
And look at us now.
Exactly. Look at us now.
I'm coming out.
With your hands up, right? Okay. But it's just, it's been a great journey, and that's the reason why I believe a year from now that we will, you know, we're going to see a lot more progress, and especially, you know, with all of these failed prophecies. And what I've noticed lately, as of late, you know, the past couple of years, that many of these religious people are trying to sell, or self-sell, if you will, that Mayan calendar, so December 21st of 2012. And I'm just kind of curious as to, you know, what the fallout will be from that. But again, you know, we're moving on. We're doing what we need to do to put a face and a name to free thought. And we've come a long way. We've come a long way. Like I said, 3-4 years ago, it was almost impossible to find, you know, more than 2 or 3 out freethinkers or non-believers. So we've made a lot of progress. And so I'm just really looking forward to, you know, what is in progress, what's in store for us. And speaking of the Reason Rally, aren't you hosting the CFI or the AAH Reason Rally party, Jamila?
Okay, party at my place. There will be an event that I'm hosting in conjunction with a few other people. I am wonderful at a number of things. Organization is not so much one of those. So I have a few people helping me out, and we are still in the throes of time and place, so more info to come. More info to come. We still have a month. Give us our month.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So again, our call in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. And press 1 if you would like to speak with our guest or any of the hosts here. And like I said, it's been absolutely wonderful. I believe that when the campaign first hit, that it caught, you know, a lot of people by surprise. But it was a good surprise. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. A lot of positive feedback, and as I'm sure you all have as well.
Yes. I know I've received a few emails. We've received a few emails from the website from people who said that they, you know, they thought they were the only ones who, you know, who didn't believe, and that they're in the process of letting go of, you know, their religious practices. And we've gotten a few questions, and, you know, we're just letting them know we're here to, you know, just answer them however we can, and just, you know, we're just going to do what we need to do to support each other.
Exactly. And I believe we have another caller on the line from 443. Are you there?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Which one of you said that you were from Nashville? Because you have got to add me on Facebook. Because, oh, my God. Okay, please add me on Facebook. Like, I've been to...
In the process.
We have... Okay, cool. Because there are some groups here in Nashville, but sometimes you find that they're, the age of the members is slightly on the older side, which isn't bad. You know, but sometimes you want to go out and do something fun, you know, and that's, you know, when maybe you want to hang out with a different group, you know, so.
Sure.
But, you know, variety is the spice of life. So, anyway, I just wanted to make sure that you were adding me. I'll be quiet and I'll stick my hand up if I have a question.
Well, we actually had a question in the chat room, and it said, you know, basically, we free thinkers are growing, but there are a lot, far too many overly angry atheists who actually give free thought an ugly face, and that is counterproductive. How do we combat that?
Yeah, and I know I answered that somewhat, and maybe, yeah, I can give another perspective. The best thing we can do is just continue, keep our focus, continue to do what we do, you know, just like in the religious community, just like in all, you know, facets of life, there's always going to be those who aren't always going to represent the most positive efforts. But, you know, the worst thing we can do, and I understand because we are a group of people who've already felt that isolation, the ostracism, you know, the rejection and such. So stuff like that is, it just doesn't help. It just compounds things. But the best thing we can do is just to try to accentuate the positive as much as possible and continue the focus. Because, you know, it's easy for, you know, it's okay when, you know, we speak from our emotional side and such. And that's one thing that is lost on this community. You know, we still have emotions. We still get upset. We're human beings. This happens.
Exactly.
But what we can do is just not be overcome by them, because then that's not helping at all. And when we see those that are, and we know that they're genuine, then we just continue to work, try to work together and help each other. And if we see that those are that they are overly negative, then we just say, hey, you know what, I'm sorry we couldn't work together or whatever, then just keep it moving.
Can I say something?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Oh, okay. I was going to say, I agree. There are some people who are out there that just they go about it completely wrong. But I do think that there is a voice for someone who's a little bit more strong, I guess, in their opposition to certain elements in religion. I think there's a place for that. But I also think that the label angry gets misused whenever someone speaks out against religion or speaks about their disbelief. And I think that it's applied generally, like, to everyone, you know. Even when I have a pretty decent conversation with a religious person, they always have a way of saying, well, it seems like you're angry with God. No, I'm not angry with God. I'm angry with religion. I can't be angry with God. God, being angry with God is like being angry with Peter Pan. Like, I don't know that this thing exists. I'm just, you know, like, but they have a way of doing that because to them, everything that is in their faith is associated with all of these lovely, pleasant things. They don't see the harm that it does, you know? I was just saying, so I think there's a place for both, and I think sometimes, like a lot of times, the label angry gets applied to all of us when it's not really necessary, you know? And
well,
I don't
whenever
think
you get any group of people, you're
going to
get all kinds of personality anyway.
Right.
So I guess my question is,
I get what Raina's saying. I get what is being said is that just because we do not subscribe to this religious concept and we have valid reasons for it, all of a sudden we're deemed as angry. All of a sudden we're deemed as attacking them when that's not true. You know, they've been taught to believe this for so long and to have this narrow-minded concept that any other point of view is considered to, you know, be slanderous, if you will.
Right. So I guess where that comes in is what's the difference between being angry and being passionate?
Right.
Passion.
Well, I mean, I have to say I do get angry after being accused of being angry for a while. Like, it's only so many times you call me angry in the conversation before I actually get angry. You know what I mean?
As a black woman who has been called angry for simply yelling loudly, "Hey, how you doing?" I think that that's a charge that is levied more quickly against us. I think it's a charge that is levied against us knowing that it will shut many of us up and shut many of us down. I genuinely believe that a toolbox needs a whole lot of different tools in it to be effective. I personally am a hammer. I do one thing very well. Every so often you can flip me over and I'll take a nail out that shouldn't have been driven in. I can morph myself painfully and uncomfortably into a soft rubber mallet, but still I do one thing. I hammer, I hammer, I hammer. That's who I am. We need people who can smooth things out, bring some level to a conversation. We need some people who do nothing but screw it in and screw it in tighter, or sometimes do unscrew what should not have been screwed in. So it takes all kinds, and the charge of anger. Greta Christina, the blogger and writer, does a beautiful,
love her,
moving, does a presentation about why are atheists so angry, and I charge anybody to listen to that woman and not feel why atheists are so angry.
Right.
Any girl who's ever been told, we don't need to educate you, we're going to educate your brother. Any woman who's ever been smacked and told, well, you know, submit. That's what Jesus wants, submit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any man who's ever been told, you know, you have to be responsible for the spiritual wellness of everybody in your family, and if any of them fall, it's on you and you're not good enough. We all have reason to say religion does harm, and I am angry because religion does harm, and people tell me that that's good. So call me an angry black woman all you want. I get it all the time. I laugh it off. I don't even hear it. I understand that it's hurtful to a lot of people because it is a hurtful thing to say. But you know what? Yeah. You want to see angry black woman talking about religion? Pass them my way.
There you go. There you go. We have area code 973 on the line, 973, and I see you, Mario and Morgan. You're both live as well. But 973, may we ask who's calling?
Yes, peace to the room. My name is Rasul Amin. I represent independent ministry, and my theme is how to put the neighbor back in the hood. And what I wanted to share first is I just recently received a book called The Language of God by Francis Collins. And in the book, just briefly, it says, I'm quite sure you guys are familiar, but anyway, it says, the best-selling atheist tracks like Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion, Daniel Dennett, Breaking the Spell, and Christopher Hitchens' God Is Not Great portray religion as an unreasonable form of blind faith, often leading to fanaticism, and even violence. Some of these atheists call themselves rights, implying that they are smart people who base their opinion on reason and science and don't follow the silly superstitions. But for all their credentials and learning, the atheists have been duped by a fallacy that may be called the fallacy of enlightenment. And it, and it was first pointed out by the great Enlightenment philosopher Immanuel Kant. The fallacy of the Enlightenment is the glib assumption that human beings can continually find out more and more until eventually there is nothing more to discover. Enlightenment fallacy holds that.
Russell.
There's one more point. Okay, let me just get to the last point. What he's saying here, this is the last point that caught my attention. It's saying, consider a tape recorder being the kind of instrument it is. A tape recorder can capture only one mode of reality, sound. Tape recorders can hear, but they cannot see, touch, or talk. Thus, all aspects of reality that cannot be captured in sound are beyond the reach of a tape recorder. The same Kant said, it's true of
okay,
the human
but wait
being.
A minute, Rachel. I guess
okay,
my question
right.
is, what is your stance? No, what's your stance? What is your stance on humanism? Where do you stand on that?
Okay, I've been on your show before. I just wanted to share that. I think one of the main problems is language. The reason I say that because I'm a Muslim and my best friend is an atheist, and we worked hand in hand in the community dealing with the youth and social ills. And we've been doing it for about 2 years now. And we met, how we met on a construction site, there was several Muslims on the job, which they used to battle and argue with him all the time. And I happened to come through one time, he didn't know who I was. And they said, well, ask Rasul a question. He said, oh, my God, he's a Muslim too. So make a long story short, we are now the best of friends in terms of humanism. Okay, we have a level of understanding of the concerns about community and humanity that go beyond our particulars, and it works out well. So my whole point is I think that language is the main problem with people because humanity has more in common than division. And as long as we focus on the division, we'll stay separated. And one last note, the title Black Atheism on this note, because, you know, black people have a problem of carrying the burden of the race. And the history of what happened to us in slavery is not that the blackness they took away from us that affected us so much. It was our humanity they took away from us. So even the term black is a title that we don't understand that we could get rid of, too. Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
I just want to point out one thing. Brother Rasul admits he is a humanist.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And every doctor who has ever been permitted to treat you, to treat your child, to treat your loved one, took the Hippocratic Oath, which we can all agree on. First, do no harm. Do what is best for the humans. I think that's a place for us to build on.
Yeah.
Yes,
know?
Definitely. First, do no harm, because the last thing you want to do is to make a bad situation worse or exacerbate an already, you know, bad situation. But, again, so you feel that his stance is humanist?
Well, he said it was. I mean, he said that he works with... Oh, sorry. I was going to say, well, he just said it was. I mean, he said that he works with, you know, atheists, his atheist friend to help the youth and, you know, do work in the community and that he, you know, he has humanist values. And, I mean, that's not the problem. But I do want to address what he was talking about with Francis Collins and the Enlightenment problem. Okay, while I have to say that there are some atheists that maybe – you know, resemble that, that I think that the Enlightenment problem isn't a problem of atheists, it's a problem of religious people particularly, because their sense of enlightenment comes from a book or a sense of or a belief that they have about a higher power that they can't prove, but
mm-hmm.
but yet they assert all of these things as being true, and they have and there's nothing that you can say to challenge them.
you know, legitimately within that their faith. So who really has the enlightenment problem? Who really thinks they have all the answers?
May I make a comment? May I make another comment?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yes, yeah, so I just wanted to say, like I said, in terms of language, because this is where we come in as our individual selves, because, you know, when you came out the womb of your mother, you went to her breast for milk. You didn't have a Bible, Quran, an imam, a scholar, or minister to tell you to do that. Your innate nature is upright. It's already
that's right. That means we were all born atheists.
But what I want to say is this, is that, remember I said in the beginning, I'm Muslim. And if you were to see me and my wife walk down the street, in terms of looking at her outer appearance, you wouldn't have no idea, because my wife doesn't cover her hair. She doesn't wear long black dresses. She dresses casual, because that's what's taught in Islam outside of the extreme part, which most people are caught up into it. So as an individual, if you're a free thinker and you go into something for yourself and don't let people lead you, you can get the good out of it and what's supposed to be there for you.
You know, I gotta say something. One of my major problems with religion, is not only the psychobabble, but you know, the stuff that people tell themselves to make themselves feel better about it, and it's almost like the idea that ignorance is bliss, or you know, rationality. You know, what I'm saying is the truth is too painful to admit, so why not remain ignorant to it? You know, you got this televised homegoing service for Whitney Houston, which most normal people refer to as a funeral, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have this funeral homegoing service. And, you know, why are we perpetrating this here? Misinformation and mystical lovey-dovey bullshit. But then you also have people who, you know, like my man just said, that there are other types of Islam, and then there's Islam, which is not as strict. And I listen to Christians talk about that. Well, I'm going to take this and not that. I'm going to take this and not that. I'm going to take that, not this. I'm going to follow this, not that. If you can take different parts of any religion you choose and choose to follow this and ignore that, be it strict, orthodox, or whatever, what is the point of following any of it? If you can choose it for yourself what to follow and what not to, what is the point of following in of any of it? If you're trying to build a house using an instruction manual, you can't use instructions 1, 5, 12, 35, and 15.
Yep.
You got to use every
you got to follow it step by step.
So what is the point of believing any of it if you can choose what not to believe or what not accept?
And then try to tell other people that they should believe in it.
Right.
That was right.
You know,
yeah, but that's a good question. Why follow anything?
Yep, especially when it's not predicated on evidence and critical thinking and logical reasoning.
You know, and
exactly.
I've never been, when I first came out, I wasn't an when I first admitted that I was an atheist, I should say, I was very combative. If I ran into a Christian spouting some bullshit, you know what I'm saying, me and this person about to go at it, because I'm going to, everything that he comes at me, especially if he uses scriptures from the Bible, I would eat his behind alive on that. But, you know, as I got more settled into my atheism, I became less combative and more like, just be Mario, just be me. The more people who
right,
see me
exactly.
just being myself without believing in God, the more, you know what I'm saying, the less I have a need to show anybody how special I am because I don't. Because I feel like this, if you're a believer or whatever position you're trying to defend, I'm attacking that position, you're going to dig yourself into that position even harder just to hold your position. I haven't taught you anything because I'm berating you and forcing you to defend yourself. You know what I'm saying? It's like you take up your position, I take up mine, and we duke it out.
Right.
I don't think
And that's on both sides. That's on
yeah.
both sides of the fence. That's on both sides of the fence. And that's why I feel that we need to be more conscientious about how we interact with theists, you know. And, again, everybody plays a part. So some of the more hardline people you know, we need them for certain things. And some of the people that take a softer approach to it, they're needed as well. I mean, I guess it just really depends
right.
on where you are. But it's been interesting. It's been interesting, you know, the past few years getting to know other non-believers and seeing how we all interact with people of faith differently. It's been a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question? And this may be a bit controversial related to Muslims. I never understand how they can compete. Well, never mind. I guess it's pointless because same thing. But I was going to say, I never understand how they can complete. They spout a lot of stuff about blackness, you know, and about the enslavement of blacks in America and everything. But they never talk about that whole 1,400-year Islamic slavery thing going on
in Africa. Right. Islam by far is the largest religion in Africa because of the conquered, you know, because of the Arabs conquering the African nations and forcing that religion upon the people, just like Christianity was.
And they're even going to Vietnam and the Philippines and other places killing Buddhists because they're not Islamic and whatnot. I mean, crazy.
Oh, yeah, we have another Atlanta call on the line. Are you there, 404?
Yeah, it's not Atlanta, it's Florida. I just have an Atlanta number. I'm using a cell phone. This is Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Hello, everyone. I'm calling to get some ideas about best practices. As some of you know, I'm trying to organize a meetup that coincides with the National Day of Solidarity for like non-believers. And I guess to make a long story short, I'm finding myself like having to like reply to various email messages because I'm the organizer of the event. And every now and then I get people, we'll call them homo sapiens, who have stringy hair because they don't want to talk about race. And they'll say, well, don't you know race is a social construct? And why are you trying to do this? Why are you trying to separate yourselves? Atheism has no race. And there was one email, message in particular, well, I had to really think about, be thoughtful in terms of how I was going to respond. At first, I didn't want to respond, but I said maybe I should respond because the suggestion was that I was being racist by organizing an event that I was being racist. And at first, I wanted to respond back with exclamation points, italicized letters, and capitalized words. But I had to be thoughtful because I'm the face of the meetup group. And so, I guess what my question is: how have you all dealt with that? If you had to deal with it, the kind of like pushback from people who they want to sort of avoid the race. How have you all dealt with that?
Well, Richard, let me just tell you that, you know, one of the key points that you can make is that although this is a day focusing on, it is not exclusive to the black community, please make it known that everyone is welcome. And if you need to refer to any verbiage in any of our websites, feel free to do so. You know, you can politely explain because you're going to get – we've gotten this question plenty of times.
Exactly.
And that, you know, you can just try – do your best to explain that, you know, this is not something that – we're not trying to separate ourselves at all. It is just a means for us to try to focus on the solidarity in the black community. We're not trying to shut anyone out, you know, just – I mean, this is simple as that. So –
right. Do not allow anyone to lure you into
right.
or make you into a race inflamed conversation because it's a lose-lose situation. And again, it's not necessarily about, you know, self-isolation or self-segregation or anything like that. It's open to everyone, and that's been stated several times. And, you know, again, you know, as Mandy, you know, stated, you can get the language or the verbiage off of any of our websites, or you can also refer them to Mr. Wright. Mr. Wright will be more than happy to explain to them what's happening with this particular day of solidarity. And his email address is aadayofsolidarity@yahoo.com. So if you feel that the situation has escalated beyond, you know, what you're comfortable with, just refer him to someone else if need be.
Okay.
You know, hey, Richard, hi, I'm Mario. Try to help them understand that, well, let me put it this way. I've been to other atheist groups and whatnot. They were predominantly white, and I was like one or two black guys there besides myself. And between those groups and other groups like BN that I've been in for like my entire atheist emergence, there's a big attitude difference. There's a definite attitude difference. I'm not saying they're not good groups. They are. But there's also a comfortability and a familiarity that we kind of have almost innately, I guess, because of a shared, ancestral history or whatever. And so they have to understand that it's not anything about isolation. It's just about, I guess, primarily familiarity. And people congregate to areas where people who are look like them are familiar. They're familiar with anyway. I mean, I still travel around with white atheists, you know, or any atheist, whatever. So just try to help them understand that it's not about race. It's so much as it is about bringing these people together because they have to. Maybe it helps them understand it a lot better to be around people who they're familiar with and have something to share with.
Yeah, did
that help you, Rich? Richard?
Yeah. I mean, this was, you know, what I do tell people, and I'm hoping that they're knowledgeable that I said, well, we're modeling ourselves after black non-believers of Atlanta, so I want to give you all some props because you all have been a good example for me in terms of what I'm trying to do. And I was just curious because this will be the first meetup that I've organized, and I want to do things right, and I want to make sure I do things effectively in a positive way.
Well, excellent. Good for you, Richard. So, I mean, again, you know, you have a lot of support out here. You can email any of us and or inbox us, and we'll be happy to, you know, help you out with, you know, whatever you need there, you know, within reason, because, you know, many of us live in other cities. So, you know, but again, you know, we've posted your meetup group on the page. We've talked about it and all of that stuff there. But keep your head up. Stay strong. You're going to get some pushback. We get it all the time. I get emails, inboxes all the time asking me why we have black in front of our name and, you know, why do we have to have that particular adjective. And we've explained it over and over and to the point that I just feel as though I'm tired of explaining it to people.
I mean, that's
but,
the way I feel. That's the way I feel. And I don't, I'll be honest, I don't always like being lectured, having people telling me, black is not biological, as if I don't know. I do know that. But.
Right, but there are some people that just don't understand, so we have to be patient. We have to
right.
be patient and explain.
Right, and also try to remember that, you know, you're not going to be responsible for whatever insecurity they feel about that, you know, because that is coming from something that they may feel they're lacking in. Because one thing I've noticed, and also kind of a guilty conscience as well for some of them, if you will, because, you know, they know that they haven't made the attempt to be more engaging with non-believers of different races or what have you. But that's not your fault. You know, we recognize that there was a need for groups of this kind because of not only the issues that we face in the black community, but some of the issues that we face within the free thought community as well. And we're not going to apologize for that because it's needed. It doesn't mean that we don't want to work with other people and other groups. It just means that there are other issues that we are tackling. And it's okay you know, for us to do that and not to absolve anyone else's guilt about what they feel.
Right. And before I get up there, I just want to be sort of fair. I have been contacted by the leader of, I guess it's Florida Humanist Association. I'm not sure what the name is. And they're the largest group and the largest, like, free thinker group in the Orlando. Leader of that has also come. So I just want to say it's not everybody down here, but, like, you know, I guess occasionally it happens.
One more thing. I guess one way you can kind of push back against them is ask them if you change the adjective from race to, like, geographic location. Let's say if you just said Orlando humanist, does it mean that anyone else cannot come to that group? If you say humanist, does it mean atheists or brights can't come to that group? I mean, tell them that just the adjective is not as important as the message that we're trying to portray here. You know, if you're going to start pointing things out, you know.
Excellent. There you go. So, again, you have several different points of view coming at you here, Richard. And, you know, I hope that the information that was offered to you was able to assist you, not only you but others out there that are experiencing some of the same issues. And, again, speaking on, you know, some of the larger groups, that it's just been interesting. It's a well-known fact that they've had some issues attracting minority believers, not just black but Latino and Asian. And I just feel personally that it's important that we, you know, support some of their events and that they support some of ours in return, and we just kind of broaden our horizons in that respect.
Right. Absolutely.
Exactly. So it's been interesting. We have another caller on the line. We have area code 301. Are you there?
Yes. Yes.
May we ask
a question? Yes, thank you. I have a question. I was watching last week some of the cable news coverage of the death of Whitney Houston, and you seemed to appear to, there were like two camps. One camp that was wanting to get to the bottom of addiction and what happened, and, you know, leaving no stone unturned and just telling like it is. And there was another camp that appeared to be been coming from a more religious point of view, was that, you know, we should leave Whitney alone and what happened. She's a child of God, and, you know, she was brought up in the church. She's from a good family. Don't, you know, mess with her legacy, so to speak. But it was all appeared to be from a religious point of view. My question to you is, humanism, as you describe it, what advantages or what can that do to help people some of their problems that they have day to day? More so than, say, you know, going to church or reading your Bible, things of that nature. Because to me, there's a dissonance between what's going on in reality and your actions and what we say the church is all about. There's something, you know, there's no relevance, because you look at her service and say Whitney was believed in the Lord, was checked. That's great, but I didn't think that was all relevant to what put her in that casket. I don't mean to be cruel. It's just very confusing at times. So I don't know much about humanism or atheism, but it seems as if it doesn't promote running from your problems and seeking shelter. Because what it is in here, there's a, I don't know if you read Shakespeare or not, but there's a quote from Shakespeare. I think it's Hamlet. I'm not sure. But the quote is, "I think thou protestest too much."
Mm-hmm.
That's when people are always talking about God, and God don't even play into the picture.
Don't do
I'm like,
shit.
Why are you talking about God all the time? And no,
right.
It's not even relevant. Right. I mean, it's like you're telling yourself that guilty. You're guilty. I mean, nobody. Or you say, I'm a good parent. I'm a good parent. I love my child. Look, when it's not even why you keep saying you love your child? Why? That's not even a cause for discussion. But you keep making that claim.
Right.
You know.
And I think. No, go ahead.
Right.
Oh, no, I was gonna say you're absolutely right about that. You made some very good points because I think that her religious beliefs are probably what put her in the grave. Or it played a huge part of it because, like you said, you know, religion and you know religious beliefs and you know it tends to have it has that circular reasoning. Give it to God, pray about it. You know, it's almost like this pray go away, and there's no accountability there. So, and it says a lot for her to have been raised in the church and for her to have died the way she did. If she was such a special child of God, I mean, one could make the argument or ask the question of how effective are these beliefs if something like this happened to her anyway?
Well, yeah.
Exactly. But in addition to that, that's one of the beauties of free thought or non-belief,
right,
is called personal accountability and responsibility.
Exactly.
And in 2003, Whitney Houston, I try to stay away from topics like this, but sometimes we just can't help it. But basically with Whitney in 2003, she gave an interview with Diane Sawyer, and Whitney, held herself accountable for her actions. She specifically stated that no one can make Whitney do anything that Whitney does not want to do. And at that point, when she said that, where were all these people, all of the people that were at her funeral, you know, the other day, where were they to support her and to encourage her in her rehabilitation as well as encouraging her to get some mental health care, you know, to deal with her issues? Where were these people? And if they were praying for her then, why didn't the prayers that they had already prayed for her, why didn't they work? So why are people still telling us to pray for her and her family? Well, she's gone, but pray for her family now. And, you know, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off, Kim. I was going to say, I think what humanism also provides is that while, you know, there is this thing of personal responsibility and personal accountability, that we also have a more reality-based perspective. So while, addiction is a very complicated, you know, sort of subject. It's not simply about a personal accountability, although that is a piece of it. We also have to understand as humanists and people who have a reality-based perspective that addiction is a biological phenomenon. You've changed essentially the way that your brain reacts to certain environments where you might have done the drug, to the drug itself. You know what I mean? That you now have a need where there wasn't necessarily one before. And so, you know, we treat it differently. You know, we are not going to tell you, oh, if you just go home and pray about it, it's going to get better. Meanwhile, you're still dealing with seeing the same people who do the drugs and the environments where you've been doing the drugs and you're getting that feeling, that urge to do it. We're going to help you figure out how you can avoid these things. You know, we're going to help you get rid of the problem.
Right.
And that
ties
into the mental health care aspect of it.
Right.
You know, what are the triggers? What's triggering you to want to use these drugs? What happened? Just some people, it's a natural inclination. It's something that they wanted to try and they got hooked on it. Other people are using it to mask some other issues that they may be having. But you're right. It's a chemical or biological reaction there. And so you have to understand the full gamut of the situation. But it goes back to where were those people when she needed that encouragement? Even though she has to make the decision for herself, there's no use in putting someone in rehab or forcing them to go for counseling and help.
And we're not going to tell you it's a demon. That's the other part.
Exactly. And if one solution or if one way doesn't work, then you find another one. You know, we're gonna try to figure out how not to go down this road again.
Exactly.
But you know,
they you know, one thing though, I've said this many times before, but you know, for the sake of the conversation, right? My mother was on drugs a lot, and she went through a lot of those little rehab programs, halfway houses, and shit like that. And they all, every one of them, was religious oriented. They all had that going for them, and none of them worked. You know what I'm saying? So I'm looking at Whitney Houston's situation. I don't really, as a person, as a human, I care. As a person, I don't really know. I don't really care on that level, but I care in the fact that I understand drug addiction from the outside looking in and watching it take away somebody and everything. I don't exactly know anything else about that. But at the same time, you know, I think this whole thing, everybody needs to understand is that the person that's addicted isn't always the person that you love. The person that's addicted, you know, say, goes in phases from the person you love to the person that is hooked on this drug. At that point in time, they're not really the person you love. They're an image of the person you love, but they're a completely different person when they're on that drug and everything. So you're fighting against two different people. The person that you love may really want to get off that drug, but once they get that drug and they become that other person keeps them on it. And, you know, so from a humanist standpoint, I care about people like that because I've seen it happen. I've seen what it can do personally. And I've taken it upon myself, even when I was not so much an atheist, but I just didn't believe in God, just to not get involved with drugs and alcohol simply because I didn't want to. I didn't have a need to. And it's just, you know what I'm saying, and seeing the results firsthand of what can happen. I mean, the black community is filled with examples of this. It's loaded with them. When I'm in the hood and I'm looking at dudes standing up there at the little raggedy shithole convenience store with a bottle of alcohol in his hand in the middle of the day just standing there talking, you know he doesn't have a life. Otherwise, he wouldn't be standing up at this convenience store in the middle of the day drinking. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you look at the social acceptability, especially within the hood when it comes to drugs, you know. And, you know, it becomes not only does it become chemical, it becomes social. Then you got everybody who you know is doing this shit. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's encouraging you to do this shit. The music you listen to is encouraging somebody to sell this to you. So you've been hit so many different ways and everything.
Exactly. And, you know, to bring it right back to the campaign, that's the importance of a campaign like this, you know, so that we can distribute and people, not only the participants and the representatives in the campaign, but for those that are familiar, that's what makes it so important that we can share information. So let's just say hypothetically, if someone walked up to you and you know they have a drug issue, or someone else walks up to you and you know they have a mental health issue, that's the good thing about being able to share resources and information, so then you can refer them to Recovering from Religion or, you know, other programs that are out there and programs that are soon to be developed to help these people get the necessary help that they need without it being religious-based. So that's a good thing. That's a very good thing, you know, and that's why I'm glad that we're becoming more visible and that we're out there in the community, and that's the reason why I keep espousing, you know, a solutions-based free thought, you know, community, because it's important. We have to be able to help people. We have to be able to offer them an alternative. Now, me personally, I would not be able to counsel someone necessarily through a drug addiction, but I can refer you to people who specialize in that, who can help you through those particular issues. So, again, even with this campaign here, you know, working throughout the free thought and the non-believing community, I just think it's important that we share resources and information so that we can help people. It doesn't make any sense for anyone to hoard information when it's out there freely, but then we also have to do the research and some of the work on our end as well. So it works both ways.
But, you know, I'm going to tell you, though, is that guy still on? He might have hung up.
Which one?
The guy that was asked the question initially.
I think he hung up.
I'm going to tell you, if that person who was addicted, if their belief in God is helping them beat this addiction, don't say shit. Let them have it. Because it's more important. The more important thing is to get them off that shit. you know, once they get clean, maybe that's a different story. But,
right,
you know,
especially without judgment, you know, because I think what a lot of these people don't realize, especially in these rehab programs, maybe one of the reasons why these people leave and don't come back is because they probably feel like they're being judged by them.
Right.
And, you know, and that's not fair to anyone, especially not anyone who's trying to overcome something so strong as, especially a drug addiction.
Right.
And I think they probably do feel judged, particularly when those programs are sort of the sort of mentality that people like Pat Robertson have when it comes to, like, faith healing. Well, you didn't believe in your healing, and that's why you didn't. I didn't come out of it because you didn't fix the problem. You didn't help me fix the problem. You know?
Yeah.
Or at least get me to a point where I can deal with it reasonably, you know?
Exactly. And you're right about the faith healing. You know, if your deliverance, your so-called deliverance, you know, didn't work, it's because you didn't believe hard enough. You didn't have enough faith. So they always have an out in that situation in which you can never put the blame back on them. And, you know, it's just interesting because, again, you know, even part of Marvin's eulogy yesterday, he was basically telling the people to not rely on themselves and don't listen to people who are telling them that the answers pretty much lie within them and to take the responsibility on themselves. And, again, they have to have a devil or some other person to shift the blame to. It's all about projecting that blame. They don't want personal accountability, personal responsibility. I'm going to find that quote by Marvin, and I'm going to post it as my status update as an example as to why it's important that we continue to, you know, stay out here and to tell people that it's important that we spread the message of personal responsibility and accountability. And once people hold their own feet to the fire, maybe, just maybe, we'll be able to see some real improvement in the community.
Right.
So
I wish that would happen because it is just, it's so lame, man, to see everybody, you know. I mean, people will pray about anything. I mean, I'm looking on Facebook and everything, and I see people like, you know, my mother's in the hospital, so y'all pray for her. But if the prayer was working, why is she in the hospital? Why is she there to be with?
Well, not just that. You know, I actually, and it's interesting that you bring that up because, like, just recently I was talking to a friend of mine who happens to be Muslim. And we were just talking about like just different things that are going on in my life. And he was saying that he doesn't understand why someone like myself would be going through different troubles because I'm a good person. I never did anything, you know, really harmful to anyone or anything like that. I won't get into his past, but he has a past. And in any case, he was saying, you know, why don't you try praying? You know, it doesn't cost you anything. And he was like, and if things change, then, you know, then I'll be right. I was like, well, no, you wouldn't be right even if things change because, I mean, things change all the time. You know, things change for the better, things change for the worse. I mean, if anything, you'd just be looking at a coincidence, not evidence of prayer work.
And I differ from what he says. You know, I disagree with him. He says prayer doesn't cost anything. Yeah, it does. Prayer costs someone their life when they decide to forego taking their HIV meds, thinking that they can pray HIV away. Prayer costs, you know, some people their lives because they continue to take the drug believing that they will be delivered from that or that God will take the taste away. And I can give you many more examples as to, you know, the cost of prayer and the cost of the non-effectiveness of prayer.
No, I can too. And you know, and I told him, I said, you know, I understand where you're coming from. And so I'm not going to take this as an attack, and I'm not going to take this as a moment to attack what you believe. I think you know what I believe, and I would wish that you would respect that. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it really wasn't the time for me to go off on him because I understood where it was coming from. It really was coming from a place of him being sincere, you know what I mean, and not trying to, not trying to hurt or attack me. So I didn't take that moment to go there. But I told him, I said, I think you and I both know from other conversations that I have just as many counter examples as you have examples for why faith works, you know? And I was like, I don't think that you want to go there, and so I understand where you're coming from, but, you know, I appreciate it. Let's move on. You know, that's where I pretty much went with the situation.
Excellent. And again, we're down to the last 10 minutes here, and I'm going to pull a few more calls in. But we want to thank Jamila Bay for being our guest today, and she had to leave. But we thank her for being a guest on the show today. She was absolutely fantastic. She gave information as to where she will be later on in the year, as well as during the Reason Rally campaign. And I'm going to write up something and post it on blackfreethinkers.com and post it on my page so that we'll know where to find Jamila. And, you know, those of you, she's in your area, make sure you get out and support her and go and say hello. I'm more than positive that she would enjoy that. So, again, you know, we thank Jamila for being absolutely wonderful and being, you know, a part of the Black Free Thinkers radio show today. And she's welcome to come back at any time. So, with that being said, we're going to open up the lines here. We have 419-267, and we have Travis. But 267-419, may we ask who's calling?
Oh, this is Marvin.
Yeah, this
Hi, Marvin.
This is Brother James.
Oh. Tell me who's gone.
Hello? No. Yes, so did you all have questions for us?
I have a general question.
Yeah.
This is Marvin.
Okay.
My question is how I think the Black Free Thinkers movement, what's the economic agenda behind it? Because when you attack the church, you're attacking a money machine and with unlimited resources. What is going to be the Black Free Thinkers economic agenda? To me, I have a lot of ideas because, man, this is Marvin Hill from your Facebook page.
Oh, hey.
Hey, what is going to be the economic agenda behind this? Because when you attack in the church, because I was at a time 23,000 with 55 black churches, how can you attack that money agenda? I suggested to a bunch of people, like an investment club, to build up resources, because when you attack the church, you're attacking a money agenda.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the biggest thing which I see.
Yeah. Well, we would try to encourage people to put their money into more viable resources. You know, definitely not just tithing to the church where you're not getting anything back from it. Invest the money. Make sure you put it into, you know, if it's viable to open your own business, do that. You know,
exactly.
Anything that would further help the individual and a group progress, you know, with a reasonable means, then that's the best way. You know, there's no one way to go about doing it, but it definitely doesn't mean if you want to support community services that are more secular based, where you know that there's no proselytizing, you're not being force-fed anyone's beliefs before they receive services. There's all sorts of ways to better invest your money. And, of course, you know, yes, that the church will have a serious problem with that. You know, however, yes, but yes, you're absolutely right about that. they don't want that to dry up.
Oh, yeah, and my stance on that particular issue is the monies that we're spending, especially outside of our community and as well as in the church, take those monies and reinvest it in your community. And when you reinvest it, as capital in your community, it paves the way to modernize buildings, to create commercial property, to house different businesses. And with those businesses, that creates jobs. It creates jobs and it creates opportunities. So I feel that the money should be reinvested back in our particular communities, and we should patron the businesses and the social services that we offer, you know, within the community. You know, again, it's about reinvesting in what you believe in, reinvesting in the neighborhood that you live in, reinvesting on, you know, basically what we claim to love, which is our community. It's just as important because no one else is going to do it.
I agree with that. I agree with some of that. A lot of that, Kim. You know what else you should do? You shouldn't be trying to copy the churches. How about we tax the churches, take their money away, then we don't have to copy them, and then that knocks out the inequality of the dollar. They had an article this week that was saying that the Vatican was hit with a $6 billion or $6 trillion bill or whatever the number was, that Italy's going to make them start paying property taxes. And if we really looked and said, well, wait a minute, because they said that 20% of all of Italy's properties are owned by the Vatican. Well, that's what's going to happen when somebody does property taxes. They're going to own all the property. And if we looked around and every time you saw a church, you thought, hey, they ain't paying any taxes, it would blow your mind how
exactly
much area they take up.
Exactly, and not only with their churches, many of them own a portfolio of real estate that would choke the average man if they really knew how much wealth that church had acquired. And yes, they should be taxed, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. That's why I reposted that article about the Vatican. As a matter of fact, there was a scandal not too long ago that's just coming out about TBN that has close to $1 billion coming in every year, as well as assets, and how they are facing a lawsuit now talking about misappropriation of funds. So they had a whistleblower amongst them that's telling these stories. It happens. And I'm not saying it happens with every church. I'm not saying it happens with every religious institution. But there are a few and that need to be looked at. They all need to be taxed across the board because they're sucking resources out of our communities. They're not necessarily contributing anything, because if you have a church in the middle of the neighborhood, why aren't churches opening businesses? Why aren't they employing the people in the neighborhood? Why is it that the only people that you see at some of these churches working are the pastor's children or the people in leadership, their children? Why is that?
Yep. I agree with you guys on that. But my thing is with that, you're fighting every form of government when you're fighting the church. I mean, even you could say Brock, he listens to what religious people say. A good example, look at Whitney Houston. No commercials. And they gave a good display, and you see how the African-American church operates. I've seen Jesse Jackson. I've seen Al Sharpton. But then I will see a person like Clive Davis who's ripped Whitney Houston off. And nobody speaks, but we'll throw Bobby Brown out. But then we won't address the main issue. You heard that pastor give the eulogy saying they want to copyright my eulogy? And nobody says a word as black people. The biggest industry in the black community is the church. You see them everywhere. We will give the money to the church before we even build a hospital, a bank, a credit union, anything. Changing that mindset, to me, is that's the biggest. You can get a certain percentage, but I just wonder how do you go about that? Because it just baffles me. I watched that service yesterday, and to me, it was just all about photo ops and money.
Yes.
And nobody can
be. Yep. Hey, that funeral yesterday gagged me so bad. By the way, Tina's on the line, too. It gagged me so much because I'm watching it, right? And all I saw was God. Whitney, God, Jesus, Whitney, Jesus. You know, it was just sick.
I'm glad
and
I didn't watch
it. Was,
I'm so glad I didn't.
Exactly.
Oh,
and
but don't get me wrong, Steve Wonder
did
a great job. You know, but.
Wait a minute, we're
down
to the last minute, so I want to let everybody know that they can call in to 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. You have 1 minute. Seems like we may be going into overtime, but until then, I would like to thank everyone who called in, was in the chat room, and is going to listen to the archive. Thank you so much. So go ahead, Travis.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it, and, it, you know, I am torn because I try and really be nice with my comedy, but I don't see how to attack this topic nice. When I saw those black folks in there, all I can think about is what I've learned. And what I've learned over the last few months I did not know is, yeah, it makes sense that black church is longer. That funeral was 3 hours and 45 minutes or something like that. But it makes sense because black folks, we didn't find out about Jesus until we were in the cotton fields. And if you can sit around and pray and sing or pretend like you're praying and sing and they could keep you out the field for a little while longer, why wouldn't you do that? And it's like so many generations passed that we forgot why we started believing or acting like we believed that shit in the first place. It was to get out in the North. If you said you were Christian or if you were a Christian, you could not be a slave. So, of course, we would, hallelujah, throw our head back and be the believingest folks. But we forgot. We forgot what we were faking.
Well, again, we have a history of forgetting things. People forget about Jim Baker. People forget about Amy and I think it's McPherson, the other televangelist, you know, faith healer. People forget about all of these people that have been caught up in scandals. I mean, people forget about, you know, 5 years from now, people will have forgotten about Eddie Long. He'll be back with another ministry doing the same thing that Robert Tilton and Jimmy Swaggart and Jim Baker and all of those guys have done.
Now, Kim, that's King Eddie Long. King, King, something like that. King Bishop King or something.
Yes,
hello.
The time.
Hello.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. When you get into the churches, you gotta look at it from a historical perspective. You see that the church was at a point in time it became a tool where they actually did some constructive thinking. I think it now evolved into like you was alluded to this type of circus. I think this was after the civil rights movement when they began to implement certain laws onto the church. I think it's the 501c3 and other forms of funding where they could control what you say in the church. So that, you know, to say that, you know, how can we change the churches? Understand that these churches that's on every corner in the cities, they're there for a reason, and that's to keep the people believing on something outside themselves, you know, to solve their problems, you know, to believe in Jesus, that Jesus is going to solve your problems, and they don't give no solutions to what's going on in the city. How is it that there is no social structure implemented even in the church as to who you even marry, you know, so it's, that's what you got going on today in the church, but that didn't really occur until after the civil rights movement, you know, because we know that a lot of our so-called great leaders came out of the church, and it was a Christian vibe to a lot of things that did occur when we was demanded certain civil liberties in the history of America.
Yeah, but Martin Luther King said that he told Harry Belafonte, "I am from the church, not of the church." Okay, if Martin was of the church, he would have, you know, posted up, got him a building, and took all their money if he wanted to be that type of guy. But he didn't. He talked about the church because that was the book they knew. But he was a little bit higher than just that, a little bit too much that, but it was above that.
Yeah, I was speaking more so in the context of, I agree with that. I was speaking more
right.
so in the context of.
It's like the prosperity gospel,
the
afterwards. Yeah. Almost like when the 70s and 80s was when that prosperity gospel really seemed to become very popular. And it really seemed like the focus shifted towards that as opposed to actually helping people, you know, in a sense of, you know, maintaining our rights, our human rights, rather. And there was just seemed to be more of a focus about, you know, getting money or, you know, getting these basically making these pastors rich.
Exactly.
Right, because the prosperity gospel is really just church mixed up with Amway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you're paying off, give me some money and God will give you some. That's really what they're saying, but people, and I don't know how to say it, they're dumb. You're dumb if you're following that. You've been tricked. Hoodwinked.
Yeah, well,
bamboozled.
We have 202 on the phone. Let's bring 202 into the conversation. You're live, 202. May we ask who's calling?
It's MC Brooks. What's going on, everybody?
Hey, Brooks.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? All right. I actually was calling because I wanted to address something I heard earlier, but whoever was just speaking, like, right before I called, there's no other way to say it, because I said hoodwinked at the exact same time you said it. These people have been tricked. Like, it's manipulation. I really don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, you all are correct.
So
it's a big pyramid scheme. But
can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. And we've also left the ability to talk about the truth and a lie, falsity and reality. That's gone out of this. When someone's like, but you don't understand the passion I feel. You don't understand the feelings and the emotions that I get from praying. And God, I say, listen, I'm hearing you, but it's still fake. Right? I got you. I understand. I understand what you're saying. When I listen to Elvis, right, I can see the stars. When I hear Elvis singing, right, I'm one with God. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But Elvis ain't a prophet, right? It's like, what are you trying to say next? And so when people say, like, I read the Bible and I get a message in my life, okay, all right, I can be with you on that. But then they say, you know why? Why? Because the Bible was written by God. No. See, now you just went too far. Now I can't join you on that. Now it's like because I deal with truth. And so if you want to believe in this religious stuff and it does something for your life and it, using a fairy tale helps you be a better person, I'm all for that fairy tale. But once your fairy tale starts impacting your politics, the economics, the way you deal with your neighbors, now your fairy tale is fucking us up. And if your fairy tale is, I'm going to see my grandma in heaven again if I'm a good person, then I'm with you with that fairy tale. But then when it morphs into, and there better not be no faggots in my heaven, now you went too far. It's like that's the problem with these fairy tales is they can't just stay benign. They can't just stay, oh, a nice story, I love everybody, what does it matter? It always ends up mattering. That's the problem with religion. People say, leave them alone, be nice to them. You can't, because it always is going to grow to something that
you know,
is not going to help our society.
You know, twice yesterday, I was approached, because I'm black, in having to defend why the people who were at the Whitney Houston funeral cheered for Governor Christie, who vetoed the gay marriage bill this week. And I had to explain to them they weren't cheering for that. They were cheering because he tricked them by lowering the flag for Whitney. Does that make sense to y'all? You understand what I'm saying? But I really believe that the way that to attack the black church, if that's what we're doing here, is through their anti-gay stance. Start there.
Yeah.
But
they got no ground
to
stand on there. Because
against homosexuality.
What?
Go ahead. Is homosexuality.
You know, from what I know, I think that it's against their theology to be they're against homosexuality because it says it in the Bible.
Yes, but the Bible also.
I don't understand how we're able to separate that idea of theology. Theology, again, it's just a fantasy. So when I say I love to have sex with 7-year-old children, do not mess with me because that's my theology. You feel me? That's my theology. God wants me. So Warren Jeffs, the Mormon polygamist guy who's in prison for life for having sex with teenage girls, right? Why didn't we let him say that that's his religion, because he did. In fact, it ain't his religion. He's the motherfucking religion himself. He's the prophet. He's the man, right? Why didn't we listen to him? Why didn't we say, oh, you're right, let us pull back. Your rules are having sex with 13-year-old girls and marrying them and trading them off between these old men in your little Colorado city camp, right? Why don't we let that ideology stand like we do Muslim ideology? Because the Muslim ideology is very similar, and yet we hold up some ancient historical religious thing when we talk about Muslim people beating their children, their daughters. For we have three cases in the state I'm in now where daughters were beaten, tied to their beds, run over with trucks for talking to boys. Now, these people have not been prosecuted. Our government doesn't want to touch this issue. Why? The religion. It's their culture. And I'm saying, we don't let Warren Jeffs pull that bullshit. I don't understand how we're picking and choosing with what religious doctrine we stand away from and say, let them be it, and what religious doctrine comes up against our justice system. It comes up against the legality of law. And it seems that all religious bullshit comes up against our laws, and yet we're so confused. You know, we don't know what to do with these Muslim people that beat their children for these rules. We're all foggy in this country. We can't just go, hey, that's child abuse. What? Hey, I got a yarmulke on. That is child abuse. Look at my yarmulke. Right? That is child abuse. I got a Quran in my hand. And somehow we go, oh, right. I'm sorry. I didn't see the yarmulke, sir.
But again, that goes back to a point that Jamila was trying to make earlier today regarding turning this country into a theocracy and the legislation that comes up. I believe the biggest part that we can play in all of this is being familiar with the laws that are being proposed and passed and getting out there and being vocal and explaining things, you know, to the community. There are some people, when we tell them some of the legislation, you know, that's pending, they have absolutely no idea. They've been inundated by reality TV as well as a bunch of other arbitrary madness to keep them occupied or preoccupied so that they don't pay attention to what's happening with our particular government. So that's where many of us step in. And again, that's what I do enjoy about social media, that we can get the word out, that we can present this information to each other. Just because we present it, it's not necessarily our responsibility as to how someone comprehends it. We can explain it to them, but again, their comprehension level is just that, theirs. So the information is out there. We have to get better at distributing the information and explaining it and moving on from there, because again, the number one way to get someone's attention is to hit them in a pocketbook. And
yep.
If we can get certain legislation passed, whereas we start taxing these churches, I believe that would clear up half the problem, because I believe half the churches will pretty much just pack it up and leave once they're being
taxed. Can't get free money, they're going to go bye-bye. Did you notice, by the way, how Mr. Winans, the preacher dude, was wearing an outfit that was very, very similar to one of these bishops in the Catholic Church? You know, like when the bishop's wearing like a little red hat and like a big like red sash and little pinstripes red in his black, huh?
It's called a cassock. That's the robe is called a cassock, and the hat is called a mitre.
Okay. All right. Well, when they're wearing one of those bullshit hats and dresses, why was he wearing that shit? Okay. I mean, he's in the Winans. Right? And having that dress on don't make us not notice that his hair's gone. He got a deep voice, and he was talking some gibberish shit to those Jesus, God. And it was just sick. Why is his outfit so similar to the Catholic Church? Because the Protestant religions are nothing but watered-down Catholicism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And on that, oh, go ahead, Raina.
Never mind.
I think that, yeah, there really isn't, you know, any, and people always want to say, it's weird that they say, oh, you know, you can't be black and white. You know, it's too simple to say that all believers are the same. And I don't know how that is. I don't know how that is. It's like saying, you know, everyone got out of the swimming pool. You know, Tana, it's too simple to say everyone's wet now. I go, it is? They are all wet,
wow.
though. Oh, no, no, some people are misty. Some people are damp. Some people are dripping. Some people, I'm like, uh-huh, that's wet.
Wow.
All
that you just
said is wet.
And at
the
end of the day,
oh, I'm not the Jewish God. I'm this God. I'm that God. And I go, yeah, it's all as stupid as each other. I hear you.
You're wet.
But at the end of the day, we all know that it's, you know, again, a pyramid scheme, and that, you know, many of us dismiss all religions. And, again, going back to the topic that we hit on earlier, we have to do better about getting information out there to the people and taking time out to talk to them and explain them, explain things to them. And some of those people, you know, will need a little extra help. And others, you know, again, they're sharp and they're on top of it. So, again, you have to know your audience. But on that note, we're going to bring it to an end, guys. But thank you, everyone, again, who called in, who was a part of the show today. You all were fantastic, and we appreciate you, and we support you. Again, next Sunday is the 26th. It is the Day of Solidarity. Check with the Facebook page, which I posted on my page, to see if there are any events happening in your local area. If not, we definitely will follow up the following Sunday with Mr. Wright and let you all know what happened and what transpired. So on that note, you all have a lovely rest of the weekend now, okay?
Yeah.
What time are you supposed to start?
Bye-bye.